It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
The story of the UK is an economy that has got real momentum.
What is broken can be repaired. What is ruined can be rebuilt.
UK inflation is becoming much more homegrown.
We have huge potential as an economy in the UK.
This is a time to tell Israel there is a path to peace.
Our plan for the British economy is working, but the work is not done.
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. Welcome to the programme. Prime Minister's Questions is back today for the first time in almost a month, actually, after the Easter recess. Of course, recess in Parliament, but there's been plenty else going on outside of Westminster.
Yeah, plenty of news, political and economic. Inflation has fallen to 3.2% in the year to March, down from 3.4% previously. I'm sure the PM will be keen to trumpet that as a win, but it should be said the markets are taking today's inflation drop as bad news because it was a smaller decline than expecting. And they've been repricing when we might get our first interest rate cut, which of course is something that the Chancellor has been desperately waiting for.
Again, indeed, we're going to bring you our interview with Jeremy Hunt a little bit later in the programme. And he's been talking about this question of waiting for the first interest rate cut and what that might do to how voters are thinking. I wonder why that could be relevant perhaps later in the year as well. So we'll dig into some of the hints that Jeremy Hunt was dropping in his interview with Bloomberg a little bit later as well. But that's not the only subject that we'll be watching out for. Of course, I'm sure the Prime Minister, as you say, Ian, will be keen to praise the fact that inflation is still moving downwards. We'll also be watching out for, of course, the latest on the foreign affairs front as well. The Foreign Secretary, David Cameron, is in Israel. He said that it's clear the government there plans to respond to Iran's attack on Israel at the weekend. We'll be listening out to that too. Let's go to the Houses of Parliament and Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, I'm privileged to be the proud owner of a copy of the former Prime Minister's new book. It's a rare, unsigned copy. It's the only unsigned copy. It's quite the read. She claims the Tory party's disastrous kamikaze budget that triggered chaos for millions was, her words, the happiest moment of her premiership. Has the Prime Minister met anyone with a mortgage who agrees?
Well, Mr. Speaker, all I'd say is he ought to spend a bit less time reading that book and a bit more time reading the Deputy Leader's tax advice.
I think we'll have less talking. I want to get through PMQs.
Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, we've got a billionaire Prime Minister and a billionaire Prime Minister, both of whose families have used schemes to avoid millions of pounds of tax smearing a working class woman. And the former Prime Minister, has a long list of people to blame for the economic misery. They don't want to hear it. They made her Prime Minister. And millions of people are paying the price. She's got a long list of people to blame. She blames the Governor of the Bank of England, the Treasury, the Office for Budget Responsibility. The American President is blamed at one point. We even learned that the poor old lettuce was part of the deep state. does the Prime Minister agree with me that it's actually much simpler than that? It was the Tories' unfunded tax cuts, yeah. Tens of billions of pounds of unfunded tax cut, that crashed the economy and left millions paying more on their mortgages, wasn't it?
Mr. Speaker, everyone knows that 2 years ago I wasn't afraid to repeatedly warn about what her economic policies would lead to, even if it wasn't what people wanted to hear at the time. Mr. Speaker, I was right then, but I'm also right now when I say that his economic policies would be a disaster for Britain. He would send inflation up, mortgages up, and taxes up, and working people would pay the price.
Well, I appreciate the Prime Minister having the stomach to say it out loud, but everyone knows it's the Tory party's obsession with wild, unfunded tax cuts that crashed the economy. We know it, he knows it, they know it, and the whole country is living it. So when is he finally going to learn the lesson from his predecessor's mistakes and explain where the money is coming from for his own completely unfunded £46 billion promise to scrap national insurance?
Mr. Speaker, when my predecessor was running for leader, to use his words, I did have the stomach to argue out loud about her economic policies, had the conviction to say that they were wrong. But not once, but twice, he tried to make his predecessor Prime Minister. Despite him opposing NATO and Trident, ignoring anti-Semitism and siding with our enemies. It's clear what he did. He put his own interests ahead of Britain's.
I think actually when he was running for Prime Minister, for leader, he was explaining how he's funneling money from poor areas to pay it into richer areas. We know what his record is. I notice he's not denying the £46 billion promise to scrap the national insurance, but is refusing to say where the money will come from. And we've been trying for months to get to the bottom of this. So now's his chance. No more spin, no more waffle, no more diversion. I know that'll be difficult. He can either, Mr. Speaker, this is the choice, he can either cut state pension or the NHS that national insurance funds, that's route one, or he can put up income tax. Which one is it?
Prime Minister.
Mr. Speaker, we've just cut taxes by £900 for a typical worker. We've delivered the biggest tax cut for businesses since the 1980s. But while we're cutting taxes, Labour is already putting them up. In Wales, putting up taxes right now for small businesses. In Birmingham, putting up council tax by 21%. And in London, his mayor has put up taxes by 70%, Mr. Speaker. And this is just a glimpse of what they'd do if they got in power. A few weeks ago, he finally admitted it to The Sun. What would he say he would do? I quote, he said, "We would put up taxes." It's always the same, Mr. Speaker. Higher taxes and working people paying the price.
No single politician has ever put tax up more times than he has. But Mr. Speaker, just hang on, because he was given the chance. He was just given the chance to rule out cutting the NHS or state pensions to pay for scrapping this. No, he's. I was a lawyer long enough to know when someone's avoiding the question. So I'm going to give him another chance. Will he now rule out cuts the NHS, cuts the state pension, or putting up taxes to pay for his unfunded £46 billion promise to scrap national insurance? Which is it?
Mr. Speaker, I make absolutely no apology about wanting to end the unfairness of the double taxation on work, Mr. Speaker. The NHS is receiving record funding under this Conservative government. Pensioners have just received a £900 increase under this government. But if he wants to talk about tax, let's have a look at what Labour's brand newly appointed tax adviser has to say. This advisor thinks that supporting pensioners is a complete disgrace, Mr. Speaker. He believes their free TV licences are ridiculous. And if it wasn't bad enough, this advisor has called for increases in income tax, in national insurance and VAT. Now, it all makes sense now. That's who the Shadow Chancellor's been copying and pasting from.
So this is genuinely extraordinary. Two chances to rule out, Mr. Speaker, two chances to rule out cuts to state pension, yeah, cuts to the NHS, yeah, or income tax rises to fund his promise to abolish national insurance.
Order. Mr. Hall, I want you to set a good example, not a bad one. Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, this really matters. He's had two chances to rule out these cuts. Cuts to NHS, cuts to tax or pensions or tax rises. This matters to millions of people watching who want to know what's going to happen to their NHS and pensions. It really does matter to millions of people who are watching. So I'll be really generous now and give him one last chance. Very simple, very clear. Is his £46 billion promise to abolish national insurance being paid for by cuts to the NHS, cuts to the state pension, or yet another Tory tax rise?
Mr. Speaker, he's really got to keep up, Mr. Speaker, right? It's this government that's just delivered a £900 increase to the state pension. It's this government that's already committed to the triple lock for the next Parliament. He had six opportunities. I didn't think I heard him say that, Mr. Speaker. And when it comes to the NHS, you'd much rather be treated in Conservative-run NHS in England, not the Labour-run NHS in Wales, Mr. Speaker. But it's another week where all we heard is political sniping, Mr. Speaker, not a word about their plans for the country. He's failed to acknowledge that since we last met, taxes have been cut by £900, state pensions gone up, free childcare has been expanded, wages have risen for 9 months in a row, Mr. Speaker, and just today, inflation down again. Our plan is working and the Conservatives are delivering a brighter future for Britain.
So that is this week's Prime Minister's Questions. So I think if we were scoring our pre-Prime Minister's Questions bingo, Ewan, I don't think I did very well at all. I mean, we just about got a mention of inflation at the very end. No mention of any foreign affairs involved. And in fact, it was two names we didn't mention at all. Angela Rayner and Liz Truss that took up rather a lot of the real estate in this as well. Of course, the former Prime Minister's book getting an awful lot of attention as she's been doing quite a lot of interviews on it. And unsurprisingly, Keir Starmer didn't miss an opportunity to kick the Prime Minister over some of the choices made by his predecessor and the knock-on effect that that had at the time on mortgage rates, although it's probably worth saying that mortgage rates have come down since that peak as well, and that, you know, the interest rate rises from the Bank of England probably would have eventually brought mortgage rates higher. Whether or not they would have gotten that high, and certainly not that fast, of course, is a matter for history.
Yeah, book launched by Liz Truss, of course, gold dust for the Leader of the Opposition. I thought really interesting the trick he played actually today. This is really an old Tory trick, which is finding a promise of the Labour Party, putting a price on it, and then calling it unfunded, and then asking, what are you going to cut? What taxes are you going to increase? And that's exactly what Keir Starmer was doing today. He attached a figure of £46 billion to the Tories' long-term goal of abolishing national insurance. Of course, an incredibly expensive goal. It's not a promise as such, but Keir Starmer challenging the Prime Minister to say, what would he do to find £46 billion? Would he cut the NHS? Would he cut the state pension? Or would there be other tax rises? And he went on this several times in this PMQ. So interesting that Labour trying to really steal a Tory tactic on this. And I think it was reasonably effective. Although, of course, this £46 billion number is not something which is going to going to cost the government anytime soon. But it is a long-term aspiration. So the Prime Minister is trying to bat this away, of course.
Yeah, I mean, it struck me that, in fact, we were almost picked up in a conversation that we were having at the last Prime Minister's Questions almost a month ago, and that's still the focus that Labour has chosen to make today's exchange about, and fixating on this idea of, as you say, in trying to get the Prime Minister to admit what services they would cut in Labour's eyes to be able to afford a tax on national insurance. Now, Rishi Sunak did try to defend the plan or the idea of scrapping national insurance as, of course, the double taxation on work, which we heard a lot of at the time of the spring statement or the spring budget as well. But that focus again on future economic policies, potentially dangerous territory for Keir Starmer as well, because there isn't a lot on the policy front that his party has announced that that give the public a clear idea of what they're going to do in public spending, the public spending and taxation front, except sort of steady the ship and only do what they can afford.
Yeah, and interesting, I thought something which didn't feature in this PMQs, which I think we thought when we were discussing this before the show would feature. And that was, of course, that lively debate in Parliament yesterday about the proposed smoking ban. Well, not exactly a smoking ban, but the policy makes it illegal for anyone born in 2009 or later to buy tobacco products. So in effect, making tobacco illegal for anybody coming of age in a couple of years' time. Now, the vote passed, but with significant opposition from the Conservative benches, 57 Tories voting against it, and more than 100 not voting at all. Also interesting, I thought, that not a single Labour or Lib Dem MP voted against the proposals. Not a single one. So no Libertarians out in force on the red or the yellow benches, but plenty of discontent from Conservatives. In fairness to the Prime Minister, it was a free vote, so this is not a rebellion, but I think it did...
Which in itself was a choice.
Yeah, indeed it was. I thought it felt a little bit odd to hear senior cabinet members like Business Secretary Kemi Badenoch voicing their discontent at something which the Prime Minister had made clear that he felt strongly about.
Because I don't think that would stop her, given past performance, to criticise something the Prime Minister felt strongly about. But it's also looking at the polling on this as well, it's a measure that the majority of Tory supporters support.
Yeah, I mean, it's something which Rishi Sunak has been very keen to advance. It's got his name all over it. It's interesting that the Prime Minister, some have criticised him for not having a clear agenda on a number of things, but he's got a lot of sort of hobby horses which he really likes to go on. And this is something that he has said before he feels strongly about. He's mentioned it in speeches in the past. And it is a very radical policy. It's only been put into place in one country around the world. And the new government coming in New Zealand decided to scrap it. So in fact, the UK is the only country in the world to put this in place, assuming it all goes through Parliament unchanged.
Yes, it will be interesting to watch how that procedure continues. Right, that's the latest from Westminster. Meanwhile, though, the Chancellor Jeremy Hunt has been speaking to Bloomberg while in the United States. He told our colleague Kayleigh Lyons in Washington that interest rate cuts would lift voters' mood ahead of a general election. His comments add to speculation the Prime Minister won't call the vote until the autumn. Kayleigh Lyons started by asking the Chancellor when he expected to see the Bank of England cut interest rates.
Well, that's a decision for the independent Bank of England, just like here in the US. That decision is taken independently. And they have to look at lots of things. I mean, we've still got very strong wage growth data. It's been going up for 9 months in a row in real terms. But I think the big message from today is that the IMF are saying that inflation is going to be 1.2% lower. There are people who are now forecasting inflation will be lower in the UK than in the US or possibly even the Eurozone. And so, you know, that situation we were in 18 months ago with inflation at 11.1%, that is well and truly behind us. And if you're looking forward in terms of longer term growth prospects, the IMF today are saying that the UK will grow faster than France, Germany or Italy over the next 6 years. So we think we have very strong growth prospects.
So you aren't concerned at all about what potentially could happen to parts of the UK economy, like the labour market, if policy were to stay too tight for too much longer, given what you are saying is a downward trajectory in inflation?
Well, obviously, in the short term, we look to the Bank of England to get that fine judgment right. But what finance ministers like me can do is much more about the longer term competitiveness of the UK economy. And we note that the IMF today say there's a whole section about the impact of AI on the UK economy because they recognise that London is now the world's second largest epicentre for AI R&D after San Francisco. Mm. And there's a huge amount happening in our tech economy, which is third only to the US and China globally. And that is really where the big growth in the future is going to come in the UK, and that's where we think is makes it a very exciting bet for investors.
Well, and your point is taken, Chancellor, that you oversee the fiscal side, not the monetary side. So on the fiscal side, you have suggested that an election could happen potentially as soon as October. Should we expect another potential fiscal event between now and then, or have we seen all we're going to see on that front before the votes are cast?
Well, it's certainly the case that, you know, the feel-good factor as interest rates start to come down, as people start to feel higher real disposable incomes, will be stronger in people's minds come the early autumn than it is now. People have been through a very bruising period. Obviously, decisions about election timing are for the Prime Minister. And were we to have an October election, as I've said before, it would be possible to have a fiscal event in September. But we would decide much nearer the time whether that was the right thing to do.
Well, of course, you've already delivered a lot fiscally in terms of tax cuts, including personal tax cuts. And yet, when you look at polls, obviously, the Conservative Party is still running significantly behind Labour, I believe by roughly 20 points. What else may need to be done on that front to convince UK voters to keep the Conservatives in power? What would you consider doing?
Well, I'd be very cautious about looking at those polls because, first of all, as we can see from the challenges facing incumbent governments, not just in the UK, but in the US and Germany, France, the electorate have been through a really difficult period with an energy shock, with high inflation, with a pandemic. But when it comes to a general election, it's a choice about the future. It's not a referendum on how you feel right now. And that becomes a very different decision in people's minds. And we know in the UK that around a fifth of voters have not yet made up their mind who they're going to vote for. So we think there's all to play for. And what we're seeing now is much more positive data beginning to come through. Very good prospects for the UK going forward, as confirmed by the IMF today. And I think all that means that our strongest argument to the British people is going to be that having turned that corner, we don't want to take any risks going forward that would mean that we don't have that exciting economic growth.
Well, something else the IMF warned about in its report today was around something you just mentioned, the idea of potentially an energy shock, considering we are still seeing hot wars, not just on the continent of Europe, but of course in the Middle East. We are waiting to see what kind of retaliation we might see from the Israelis after the Iranian attack over the weekend. How concerned are you about the way in which this conflict may escalate and the ramifications it could have, not just for humanity, but for the economy?
Well, I think we all have to be very concerned, but I think we should also take comfort from the fact that the two biggest shocks that we've seen in the last few years, the invasion of Ukraine and the attack on Israel, have both been met by a very united response from Western allies, much more united than our opponents were expecting. And I think that what that demonstrates is that when the chips are down, we recognise the seriousness of the situation. We work together with our friends and allies, and the relationship between the UK and the US is right at the centre of that Western response to the challenges we face.
Given that there are these still ongoing conflicts, would you ever give consideration to raising defence spending, or is your focus really primarily on delivering tax cuts and that has to factor in?
Well, I think it's possible to do both because tax cuts can help grow the economy. Mm. That means you have more resources for really important challenges like security. And what I would say is that, you know, the UK recognises we're the biggest spender on defence in Europe. We recognise that going forward we're likely to have to spend more. But part of our job is also to persuade other NATO European countries that they need to spend their proper amount. We can't just depend on the United States to defend Europe. We need to play our part.
Well, we've heard certainly a great deal of that messaging in the U.S. as well, where there has been an evolving conversation as for funding for Ukraine. Certainly on Capitol Hill in Washington, it does seem that there will be a legislative effort now that could hit the floor this week that involves repo, the idea of taking seized Russian assets and using that to fund Ukraine's war effort. That's something the U.S. would like to pursue. Would you like to see the UK pursue that? Would you ask your colleagues that you were going to see at the IMF World Bank meetings down in Washington this week to congregate around that idea?
Well, I think it's a very intriguing proposal. I'll be meeting Secretary Yellen in the next couple of days, and I'll certainly be talking to her about it and getting some more detail on that. But I think we should be thinking about anything we possibly can to come to the support of Ukraine. This is an absolutely existential battle not just for Ukraine itself, but for a global order in which, you know, since the Second World War, we have largely stopped large countries thinking they can just invade their neighbours and get away with it. And if we were to let Russia get away with invading Ukraine, the ramifications would be huge, not just in Europe, but all over the world. So I think this is a proposal we should look at very carefully.
Well, and you'll speak with Secretary Yellen about that, but of course the U.S. can only do so much in this regard. A lot of these frozen assets are not held by the United States. They're held on the continent of Europe. What kind of conversations have you had with your European counterparts around this idea and whether it could actually work as well in reality as it may seem like it could when just thinking about the idea?
Well, Kayleigh, that is the point, isn't it? Everyone has to do their bit. Mm-hmm. And the US has taken the lead in terms of the military support for Ukraine. The UK has taken the lead in Europe. But countries like France and Germany have also given tremendous economic support to Ukraine. Everyone has to do their bit. So on this particular issue, there is a particular role for EU countries, but we'll be having a very open discussion. One thing I can assure you is that the G7 countries, the leading democracies in the world, are absolutely united in our support for Ukraine.
So that was the Chancellor Jeremy Hunt speaking to Bloomberg's Kayleigh Lyons in Washington. He's there for the IMF and World Bank spring meetings, of course, covering lots of different matters from the economic to the geopolitical.
Yeah, the Chancellor saying that the feel-good factor as interest rates start to come down and people feel higher real disposable incomes will be stronger in people's minds come the early autumn than it is now. So a bit of a hint on an early autumn election, though, could be a bluff. But if the market's anything to be believed after today's inflation figures, we won't get our first rate cut until November. And in fact, the second rate cut, not fully priced, until next year. So that's going to come pretty late for the government if they're hoping for some feel-good on interest rates.
Yeah, but also what a change since earlier this year, and we were expecting them much earlier in the year. Well, that's it from us for today. If you like the programme, don't forget to subscribe and give it 5 stars so other people can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen.
This episode was produced by Tiwa Adebayo, and audio engineer was Sean Gustamakia. I'm Ewan Potts.
And I'm Stephen Carroll. We'll be back with more tomorrow. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.